I just had this misconception of marriage and being a mom and how it was going to be really hard. But that was my calling and I had to just suffer through it. If I had to do that to be, you know, exalted or whatever. I was completely, you know. So I had a weird idea of what the future was going to be. So I just thought, okay, I'm just going to put my head down. I'm just going to keep going. All the guys I dated, they kind of wanted this housewife figure, at least I thought. And I thought, no, that's not me. It's not going to be me. I'm not going to do that. Like, he's going to have to respect me for being something other than that.
Angela Brower is an accomplished professional opera singer, a Latter-day Saint, and a woman. Not all of those things naturally go together all the time. And Angela was kind enough 2 years ago, immediately after her appearance with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, to talk to us about being a working Latter-day Saint woman, how her life is different because she chooses to live in Europe, to follow her profession, to still be an active and faithful Latter-day Saint, while not necessarily adhering to some of the stereotypes or some of the classic cultural norms, and while still believing in the importance of those things. We thought we'd dig up this episode and give you a chance to listen to it in case you hadn't before. Angela is very insightful. We appreciated her time in joining us and, of course, having a few laughs along the way and talking about the many, many things that are different when you are a working opera singer in Munich, of all places, and what that means for your own morality, for your faith, for your dating life, and for navigating what it means to be a Latter-day Saint in that particular area. So since this is Christmas, this was kind of a Christmas episode a couple years back, thought you'd enjoy it. Please give it a listen.
All right, we're welcomed here by the very fancy, very fun Angela Brower. great to have you with us, Angela. Thanks for jumping on for a bit.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, so
who is this Angela Brower? Explain to the Twim Nation, Al. They might not know.
All right.
They should
know. So I know Angela before she was famous to the rest of you. She just spent this last week, she was in Salt Lake with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, living your childhood dream of singing at the Christmas, it wasn't the devotional, it's the Christmas program.
Yeah.
With the Motab.
Yeah.
I think my favorite picture of that was when you were, I forget where you were, but you were like walking out afterwards and the girls were all like holding your dress and all excited and giggling.
Yeah. That was amazing.
It was adorable. Well, yeah. So who's the guy that you sang with? It's like an Italian guy.
He's actually from Mexico, Rolando Villazon.
I call him the same thing. I mean, I can't tell.
Latin, you know, they all come from the same place. So I met him, 5 years now, back in Germany, Munich, Germany, where I live, and we were doing a production together, and that's how I came to know him, and we've been working ever since together.
And
he's like,
I sing for you, but I must bring my Angela Brower.
She's the best. She's the best. Exactly. No, he was so generous. He said, I'll come on one condition if my friend can come, because he knew it was a dream of mine. And he's just a generous guy.
This was like for real, like when you were a kid, you were like, someday I will sing at the Mormon.
Yeah, and it really was. It really is. It was a dream come true. I mean, you know how, well, I don't, I'm sure, you know, other girls can relate to me. When you're singing in primary and you kind of discover, oh, I have a voice. And then you grow up, you're in young women's, and then you know, you graduate and you're in choir, you're doing choirs, and then you go to school, you learn classical music. I kind of just kept this like, well, one day. And it's probably because I grew up listening to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir like so much. My mom loves all of their recordings, and we would listen to music in the spoken word, and we listened to their Christmas stuff, and we listened to just anything they had.
Of Oklahoma.
Anything. Yeah, anything they had, we'd listen to it. And so it was always just kind of in my mind, like, I'd love to sing with them. And for me, as well as for my mom, because I knew it'd be a big deal for her too. So
what did she get to see it?
Yeah, she came. They drove from Phoenix and came to Salt Lake, and it was so cool. They even introduced them at Music in the Spoken Word. And
for real.
Wow. They stood up and everybody clapped for him, and my mom was just, oh, she was just so tickled. It was awesome. So I'm glad that she was able to have that experience, that we were all as a family able to have that experience together.
I feel like a single Mormon folk, we have to work so hard to get our parents to be proud of us. You've gone to such extreme lengths You sung with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and your mom was like, she's okay.
She's going to be okay. It's really funny. My manager, she knew it was a big deal also for my mom, and she knows I come from a very religious, you know, upbringing. And I said, the last presentation that we were all at, the choir had just sang, God be with you till we meet again. Everybody's bawling. My manager turns to me and she's like, so have you had a good time? And I said, you know what? I think this is... My mom thinks I'm just automatically now going to go to heaven. Like, if you know, once you sing with the choir, she's not worried about me anymore. I think she knows she's I'm going to be taken care of.
But it's not like one of those, you know, we all know those sort of mediocre talents that are in the choir, but to actually solo in front of the choir and they just back you up.
Oh yeah, we all know Alex Bouye. You didn't deserve it.
Yeah, that guy. I mean. All right, Alex.
He's not there anymore, by the way. I think he's out.
No, he's having a huge, you know, he's having his own big career.
But, he was on American Idol, so he's
yeah,
set.
he's good. No, but the choir was so awesome. Like, I met so many people in the choir, just kind of backstage, and
it would just be magical. And like, God be with you till we meet again.
Oh, ooh, man.
I sing that all the time, but like, yeah. It's so iconic of theirs.
The a cappella, like even the orchestra members sang it. And at one point I was standing by Mac Wahlberg and he started singing it. And I was like, okay, I lost it. Like, come on. Like, you can't do that, horrible. You know?
Can Mac sing? I mean, because directors can't always sing. I mean,
well,
can't he
you
sing?
Know, like, it's not a huge voice, but it was a pleasant tone.
It's like,
you know?
the girl voice on Seinfeld. It's like that episode.
No, definitely not like that.
Everyone. No.
So Angela,
can I get an A flat, please? Thank you.
So coming to this point, like, did you have a, because like you're saying, you kind of grow up, I mean, everybody in the Mormon church sings, and but was there a moment where you're like, I'm better than all of you people?
When you realized Ward Choir was so far beneath you.
You're just looking
you.
Around and you're like, freak, you guys suck.
No, Al, no. No, I mean, for me, it was like a long realization. I guess I was just, I'm blonde. I don't know. It took me a long time to realize that there was something there, you know, and, or maybe it was just that, you know, you couldn't think much of yourself or you weren't humble. I don't know how it was, but it took me a while. I mean, there was a point in the Ward Choir where I'm like, oh, that they can't do what I'm doing. Okay, well, I don't know what that meant, but I was just like, okay, well, I'll just, you know, keep going. And
That is actually true though, right? Like, I feel like there is, well it goes either way in the Mormon culture. Either you're like perfect at everything, or you have this sort of mentality where it's like, oh no, not me. I'm not very good. No, please, you're the best.
Right, which is actually destructive, because like my family is that way. Actually, we were quite in that way. Hard on ourselves, really hard.
You can't be proud of.
No, you can't. Like, you can't. Yeah, no, because you get teased if you thought something of yourself. Yeah, I have five brothers. Like, you know, you don't. Yeah. We just you don't say anything without, you know, smart remark coming, you know, after. So you're just like, okay. Not that they're.
How do you make the jump to being an opera singer with five brothers? I mean, like that is Helga, the Viking horse. I mean, all of that is sort of the image that you conjure up with that.
You
I feel
know
like
what?
Brothers would have a heyday with this.
Well, actually, surprisingly enough, because I'm a mezzo soprano, I have a lower voice than like those high Wagnerian sopranos that would wear the horns and everything. I'm a totally different voice type. So actually, because of my voice, I play pants rolls, so I dress up like a boy most of the time, which is really funny. Yeah, so like I'll sing, you know, Hansel and Gretel. I'll sing Hansel. He's the boy.
I play pants rolls. That's
rolls.
What they call
that's
it in
the expression.
Pants
apparently.
Rolls, trouser rolls. Like they're called trouser rolls. And you know, you wear a wig. They, you know, they make sure everything is flat, and you put your pants on, and you're the boy. And so actually,
this cannot help the dating life.
No, so boys are like freaked out that I'm in.
You're
love
like,
with,
come see my show.
You know,
I play a man.
All your wildest fantasies will come true.
Exactly. So I think people are confused, but it's actually really fun because I grew up as a tomboy. I feel so comfortable just being a goofball on stage as a boy. It's just so fun. It's way more fun than having to be like the romantic ingenue and be in love with a guy. I mean, that comes natural anyway, but it's more fun to play a character. Yeah. So
we knew each other. We were EFY counselors 100 years ago. and so we were like in Kansas in the humidity. How do you, it was literally like a year or two after that, that you jumped over to Europe and like made a full go of this. Right?
It was the next summer, Al. It was literally, I went the next summer instead of doing EFY, cause my voice teacher was like, what are you doing with your life? Here I was like doing EFY.
Like I sing hymns.
Jesus,
helping kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I was terrible. Like, I'm just doing the right thing. I'm doing the right thing, you know? He's like, do you want to be a singer or not? And
where was your voice coach from?
Indiana.
Were you a BYU grad? No, Indiana.
I was at Indiana University going to grad school. And he's like, you got to start doing like programs, like singing programs in the summer. We call them young artist programs. And so finally, the year after we had met and done EFY, I signed up for one of these young artist programs. Two guys from Munich were there. They heard me at a rehearsal and they said, would you audition for us? I went to church on Sunday. I said, I have to go to church first. I went to church on Sunday, came home from church, did a private audition for them. And they offered me a spot in their program, like young professional program. So that would be kind of comparable to an internship, but paid internship in Munich, Germany. And so I said, I'll have to think about it. So I wasn't done with my master's. I had a year left, but I asked all my professors and I said, what should I do? And they're like, go, don't give it a second thought. And I said, but I'm not done with my degree. They're like, that's why you go to schools to get a job. And so I went, so that was 2008, fall 2008. I left, got on a plane, sold my car, my apartment, all that stuff, left Indiana and went to Germany and the economy crashed. And I was so lucky that I was in Germany because all my musician friends.
The unemployment market is pretty harsh on like the arts.
Totally. Especially in the States. I mean, we are, you know, I don't think it's a luxury. Most people think that it's a luxury to have music in our society. I think it's needed, but we are considered kind of more candy than meat and potatoes. But, you know, so I was lucky.
Describe sort of the music as a like over in Germany. It's a little bit more. I mean, it's more. I don't know. Are you more
trying to say techno
over there?
Right now? He's trying to explain techno to you.
No, house music. No, like, but over there. I mean, are you like a rock star? Do people see you on the street and like get your autograph? Have you ever had boxers thrown at you as you're like getting on the subway?
No, boxers, no, but I have been stopped, but it's just because I've been there, you know.
You have?
Yeah, but it's just because, so the Munich Opera, the Bavarian Opera, State Opera House, like when me and my colleagues in this program, when we got there, there was a new general manager of the Opera House, and he was determined to make some stars, that he could say, I claim that
like
I've
the Lou Pearlman of Germany. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And so that's what he did. And me and my friend ended up being kind of like his poster children. And so he made sure we had like main stage stuff and our pictures were up, you know, and we had interviews, TV stuff. I mean, like, so he was really vital in kind of building our careers. And then my friend and I, that's what I'm saying, we ended up signing with managers and then, you know, everything just kind of came together. So public interviews, TV appearances, recordings, all that stuff kind of just happened.
And do you do a lot of this in German? Are you speaking German now?
Yeah.
Do you do a lot of like you're on TV in Germany and you're like, hello, it's me. That's not German. Hello,
I'm a beautiful butterfly. Yes.
Exactly. I always think about that. That's like the funniest thing. I love that. They have that translated into German, by the way. I don't remember what it is, but it's quite funny. No, so I do mostly radio interviews. I've done one German TV show, and I was too insecure. This was years ago. My German wasn't as good as it is today. But so I did that one in English, and they dubbed me over. But I've done a couple of German interviews, and I always have my German friend like proof what I'm gonna say before, so it like makes sense that it's grammatically correct. You know, I'm not perfect. I've got good conversational German, but it's obvious that I'm a foreigner. So I mean, no, but it's been a fun experience.
Oh, sure. That's awesome. So up until now, like where was sort of the coolest place that you'd performed before the
MoTeP?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a good question. Well, okay, so Sound of Music, right? Everybody knows that movie.
That was
filmed in Salzburg. Hmm. So just this last summer, I walk into my first rehearsal, and it's the Felsenreitschule, which is the final scene where Julie Andrews and the Von Trapps are singing, you know? And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, that was another, like, dream come true. I was singing in that theater where they have their final performance where he sings Edelweiss, and then they get taken. And
oh, my
then, you know,
gosh.
I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is insane. So, I mean, there's, yeah.
You stood on the stage? Perks. You danced in a glass greenhouse.
That was earlier.
You're living my dream.
That was on the
That's
sides.
Earlier. Yeah. You've got to learn the chronology of the Sound of Music, y'all.
I don't
and
know.
Let's
I'm
not forget the great line from Liesl to Rolf when she says, "Dear Rolf, stop. Don't stop."
That's the best line. That's right. I forgot about that. Oh, man.
Yeah,
and then when she screams "we" at the end of that's my that was the part that always confused me as a kid. My wife
Jeff is a simple man with simple pleasures.
My wife had actually never seen the movie in its entirety when we got married, so it was on TV. Whoa. And we started watching it, and I was like, "Let's just put the DVD in, avoid commercials." And then she's like, "Yeah, I've never seen this in its entirety."
Oh my gosh!
And being the delightful woman that my wife is, when way later on when Georg confesses his love to Maria and everything, and he says, "You know, when I first fell in love with you was when you sat on that silly pine cone." And my wife goes, "Really? That's when you fell in love with her?"
She has no appreciation.
It's her first day there, and she's in a pine cone, and you're like, "That's the woman I need. I'm marrying this woman. She is mine."
I wouldn't trust Danielle as far as I could throw her. She seems shady.
Yeah. She made it. Made a good start.
Anyway, so
I just love that you know the characters' names, Jeff. It's so fresh in your mind that you can quote the dialogue.
Who doesn't know
I
the same?
I love that.
When you were at the Regenbacher or whatever you said, I mean, wouldn't you want a young man to run in and yell, "They're gone," very dramatically? Or don't you want the crazy uncle character to say, "I shall miss all of you. I shall miss the money I could have made with you, Uncle Max."
Really creepy. Yeah, really creepy part of the movie. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Other fun trivia. Christopher Plummer did not do his own singing in that movie. He was dubbed.
Oh, no, and he hated every minute of it.
Shameful.
Anyway,
Christopher Plummer, famed Canadian actor, Oscar winner.
Got to get an argument in. Well, I feel like both of us are equally frustrated to get an argument in because I make up all my facts and I'm just very loud with them.
Trump.
And Jeff knows all the facts. But he's
Obama,
you know. So we match up in a very bizarre bit of wit.
So what I'm curious about is just so obviously you were invited by your friend to come sing with MoTeP. But what's the process like? I mean, does the church?
It was top secret for a while. We weren't allowed to talk about it. No one could say a thing.
I couldn't have it on Facebook. So the thing was they were gonna keep Rolando as the special guest, right? And because he was the main event.
He seems like a nice guy.
He is so awesome. And Mac Wilberg, so I was on the phone with him like back in November.
Just on the phone with Mac, you know.
You know, me and Mac.
Hey, Mac.
I was like, "What's up?"
Rapping.
And yeah. And he was like, so we were trying to figure out a song for me to sing, and I just kept saying, "I want to sing O Holy Night." And he's like, "Yeah. What about another song?" And I'm like, "Oh, crap." So they ended up figuring this French carol, which they did a great job arranging. And because they wanted it to be peppy, upbeat. They wanted me to have this like high note at the end, kind of like very, you know, bravado to show everybody that I was a legit opera singer. So I was grateful that they did that. So he was telling me on the phone that he's like, "We need to keep this a secret because every year there's like this element of surprise that we need to kind of put into the program. So you're going to be the special guest. So you can't put it on Facebook. You can't do any public interviews or anything before." And so I thought, okay, I was kind of bummed at first. I was like, "Oh, that's going to be sad." Cause I like was so looking forward to it. And so, you know, excited about
it. This is your big moment. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, it has to be a secret." But actually it was better that it was a surprise because people were like, "What? Who's this girl?" Like it was, it helped me in the end. I hope, I think, because, you know.
Well, when a fellow Mormon comes out, you got the crowd behind you right away.
Right,
it's like a
Mitt
Romney rally. They just go crazy.
If you would have boxed Evander Holyfield, you would have been president right now.
Yeah, no, it's just, yeah, it's true. It's funny because everybody, you know, here's this like girl from Arizona, Mormon girl, always wanted to sing with Motab. And so they were really like, who is this person? Like, I don't know. Everybody wants to
sing
with
Motab.
Did
she win a contest of some sort? Is that what?
Yeah, exactly. Is she paying somebody?
Oh, cute. Anyway. Oh, cute. Angela, is it wonderful?
Did they put you up somewhere better than like the Hilton Garden Inn? Do they at least take care of
you? You were the Little America.
What's it called? Grand America.
Hello.
Oh my gosh. That's the best hotel in Salt Lake. That's where the president stays when he comes.
Oh my gosh.
It was awesome. I can't lie.
Which is like a Motel 6 compared to a standard European hotel.
They probably even bumped you to like Lufthansa, you know, premium economy or something like that. I bet they really shelled out. Oh yeah. Living the dream.
No, I mean,
4 inches extra leg room. You all know what I'm talking about.
I mean, you rode first. You slept on a lay flat bed.
Oh, I wish I could have. No. I bumped myself up to Economy Plus, actually. But I was sitting next to this guy that was like 7 feet tall. I reserved the seat that had the leg room, and then I felt really foolish because I'm 5'9", and this guy was like 7 feet. He's looking at me like, what are you doing? Like sitting next to me.
No, you can't trade that though. You got to.
No, it was awesome. It was awesome. I had a good time.
Wait, so describe. I mean, talk to me a little bit about just the Mormon scene over in Germany right now. Like, what is that space like? Is it peculiar being a Mormon over there? I mean, do the people sort of know that is like
a thing
in general?
No, it is peculiar. In fact, when I first started working at the Opera House in Munich, my colleagues were like, so she's Amish, right? Like, so they totally thought it was Amish.
Where's your hat and suspenders?
Exactly. At the end, at the end of the first year of the program, I had a couple people approach me and ask, like, so you got to go back now, right? Like, because so in the Amish community, you have this 1 year.
Yes.
You can go out to the world.
Your Rumspringer was not a sexual orgy. It was, I'm going to Germany to sing and eat strudel.
And eat strudel. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? They're like, well, you only have a year, right? You've got to choose your family or the world, right? And I was like, what? Who told you this? So anyway, we cleared that up. But no, there's not a lot of members. So people are always, confused. And I've done a couple radio interviews where I've had to kind of explain just like the basic theology that we are Christians.
Ja, das ist das Mormon, ja. Uh-huh.
Ja, Mormone. So,
And how big is your ward? Like,
well, okay, so we have the entire stake basically covers all of Munich and like surrounding towns and cities. So it's huge. So there's, I was in a German ward for about 4.5 years and then I switched over to the international ward.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's awesome. So we're just full of expats and people that just want to speak English. We're very few in number, but it makes for a really special dynamic because we're all just kind of clinging to each other, surviving in a foreign country that is not home, you know?
Yeah.
So
I served in one of those wards in Kyiv, and it was cool because you have like these CIA ninjas that'll come in every now and then.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just here to take the sacrament, you know. And you're like,
yeah, totally.
Like, there's this guy, and then there's Joe Blow over here. Oh, my gosh. Like, it's
the most awesome.
Eclectic group of people, and the kids are always jacked up. They're the weirdest kids you've ever met in your life.
That's
their primary programs were the most bizarre. No, I mean, it's like they've been homeschooled in a foreign country. Like, they know no one but their mother.
Well, see, they're not allowed to be homeschooled in Germany. That it's against the law to be homeschooled. So actually, they're quite
boom.
I remember this. This was a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. So in the Ukraine, they can be homeschooled?
I don't know. It's just Ukraine. Not
first
the
of all,
Ukraine, but they're very sensitive about this. It's a whole Russia versus Ukraine thing.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I don't know. I think the military police would find you no matter what you did. They're everywhere.
Oh gosh.
It's very, the militia is
they're
very,
reforming
very
now.
Omnipresent.
Now, how is it? Now, I imagine I see the opera world being more respectable from like a morality standpoint, perhaps, than theater. Maybe I'm off on this. This is just an assumption completely, all right?
Interesting, yeah. Jeff, because that's what I thought as
okay.
well.
Okay, so I'm...
No!
I was so wrong.
Well, I mean, you're not doing hair or anything. I mean, it's opera, right? But I figure, is it difficult being a Latter-day Saint and trying to uphold your values in these sort of situations? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, actually. And it was harder when I was starting out because I was totally green, right from the States. And I was thrown into this, like, eclectic...
the sweet Mormon girl from Arizona.
Yeah, totally, like, good Mormon girl from... Arizona has to do what on stage? Like, and it was like, you have to do this or you'll get fired. And I was like, okay. So there were some compromises I had to make and I probably should have been
playing a trouser part. You had to kiss a woman, didn't you?
We all know the cross dressing is not allowed at church activities. So
that is like, most of my career is being in love with women. I think that freaks people off, but it's, it's really not a thing. It's not an issue. But no, there's some things I had to learn to do tactfully and learn to do respectfully for myself and to the Lord, to know that I'm doing something in a way that I'm comfortable with, you know, and nothing crazy. I've never had to do anything really crazy. So I've been really lucky, actually. It is a different standard than in the States. We're much more conservative, even in opera. I'd say opera is much more conservative in the States than it is in Europe, because they've had opera for hundreds of years. Like, it's been part of their culture, and the government subsidizes the arts, and they do operas, like the same opera, like every year or every other year, and they want to switch it up. They need new costumes. They need new stagings. They need a new concept for this opera that's just, you know, written traditionally, but then they take it and make it something else. But I don't know. Like, it's worked out so far.
Now, most operas I know are like the Italian operas, sort of the classic ones. There's like Germany has their own operas, right? Every sort of country over there has their own operas. Is that?
Well, yeah, like
different countries have opera.
Well, no, I well like
no, no, like culturally,
I'd never hear an opera being sung in English. It'd be like, so.
But we do. I mean, it's interesting. You're right. Every country has their composers, right? So Germany, big prominent composers would be Wagner, Strauss, Mozart. And
are you learning to sing them in all their like native tongues? So you're singing in all these different languages?
Yeah. As a classical singer, we're actually, in college, we have to take the language courses, like at least the beginning language course to German, French, and Italian. So these are like the basic opera languages. And then you have to take what's called a diction class. So you have to learn how to sing that in that language as if you were a native speaker. And you have to sound completely...
No big deal.
Authentic, yeah. So that's what most of the work is, just trying to get the vowels in the right place and like not only understanding word for word what you're singing in a foreign language, but to like pronounce it correctly.
Well, be honest, half the time you have no idea what you're saying, right? I mean, you're just like, all right, tell me what to do here.
Well, I do word for word translations, and then I do like an overall, like because it's a poetic language, like dialogue, right? The libretto, it's like Shakespeare, like some of this old German is like Shakespeare to us, you know? And so you gotta be like, okay, what does that mean actually? what are they trying to say in a poetic sense, you know? So most of it is just saying the words correctly, getting the idea and thought across to the audience and to you, and so the story makes sense, really.
That's great, man.
That's the goal, yeah.
I love it. So do you have like a favorite language that you sing in?
Well,
Esperanto. Please say it's Esperanto.
What is that?
Oh, Esperanto, it's the perfect language. Everyone look it up.
No, it's probably a Catalan thing.
No, Esperanto was invented by linguists. They say it's like the most grammatically perfect language. Like it's a language everyone can learn.
No, it's Elvish. Jeff is talking about Elvish. Thank you, Jeff.
I wish it were.
Dude, I wish there was an opera in that language. They're probably easier to sing.
Do you have a favorite opera to sing or any like Like, what do you like just go to where you're like, this is my jam?
Well, to answer your question, I love singing in German because I'm more familiar with the language because I speak it and I'm hearing it all the time. I think the best language to sing in would be Italian just because of all the open vowels. So it's very healthy for the voice and the sound is able to kind of come out more naturally. And that's the original language of opera is Italian. So it just makes sense. But people ask me, what's your favorite opera? And I just have so many. My answer is always, it's the one I'm doing at the time because it is.
It's such a cop out. Come on. Just, come on.
Say Turandot or whatever.
I don't have a favorite child. I love all my kids.
Oh, right. Yeah. See, boom, 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 boom. Oh, I wish I could sing that. Nessun Dorma. No.
All right.
No, there's some great ones. I honestly, one of my favorite roles is Charlotte in Werther. So Goethe wrote this, you know, the Tragedy of Werther. His book Goethe wrote, and they made an opera out of it. It's in French, and it's just the most beautiful story. Anyway, so that's one of my favorites.
Hold on, I'm googling this now. It's the what? The Werther?
What is it called? The
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
That's the name. The Tragedy of Voltaire.
Is it called The Tragedy of Werther? So we would say Werther. So Werther is Werther.
Tragedy of Werther's original is Google's suggestion. You monsters. Thanks, Google, for nothing.
Oh, boy. By the way, have you ever performed awesome. On that?
The Sorrows of Young Werther. That's what it's called.
Have you ever performed in what's a Bregenz? On the lake, you know, in Austria, the stage that's in the lake.
Oh,
Bregenz. How do you say it? I don't know. You know what I'm talking about?
Bregenz. No, you're right. Bregenz. No, but that's a cool thing.
Oh, you should get on that, man. Let's do this.
Yeah, that's so. There's certain like, how do I explain this? There's certain like network systems,
secret combinations,
in place,
right?
Secret combinations in place in the opera scene, and there's certain levels as well, like, so the houses are graded. So if you have a lot of money from the government, you spend that money on the best musicians you can get, the orchestra is good quality, you've got a good facility, then you're like an A+ house. So in Munich they would be graded as A+. And then you've got, you know, houses that are smaller, like physically smaller, and then they have less staff, and then they have like not the best musicians, so they'd be maybe a C or a D even. Like, so in Germany, they have more opera houses than in the rest of the world because every little kingdom wanted to have that kind of elite little opera house wherever they were. So there's so many opera houses in Germany. So they had to like make up this grading system. And since the government gives them millions of euro every year. Yeah. Yeah. Right. You got different teams. You got the pros.
You're up in the Premier League and you got all the lower.
Yeah. So, So I haven't sung in that festival because that's not in the...
Are they lower than you? Oh, I knew it. Those peasants.
I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that. But there's just a different... There's like a... I don't know. How do you say
Did
that?
Did you know that going in? Way? Were you like, these guys interviewing me in my bedroom in Indiana right now? This is an A+ house. Is that like common knowledge?
I had no idea. No, I was clueless. I mean, if there was one person that was not aware of what she was doing, it was me. I mean, it was really like, what? And so that's why all my professors were like, you have to go. It's the Bavarian State Opera. And I was like, what's the Bavarian State Opera? This is how clueless I was.
Well, we were kind of talking before this just about like, you know, I've always, just as life goes along, you know, there's always part of me that sort of second guesses. Was it the right thing for me to check out and work for 8 years, a decade on like business and put my head down and just work on that? Did I miss my calling in life? You know, did I not go and meet that one girl that I was supposed to? Like that sort of stuff sort of plays in my head. And I was asking you about that, and you said that didn't really bother you. You kind of felt like you were led to this, right?
It's so interesting because when I mean, I had always dated, you know, through college, and I just kind of thought, well, I'll do the singing thing because I can do it. And I had a scholarship as an undergrad, but you know, I'd never thought. I wasn't really brought up to think I could have. That sounds awful, but like I just never thought I would have a career. You know, you get married and you have a family, and that's what that's the most important stuff in
life.
That's
the Arizona way, we call it.
That's the way we do things, and there's nothing wrong with that. But that's just how I always thought. But I always wanted something more. I just kind of figured there's got to be more than just that. You know,
than an eternal family. That's right. No, that's what I think too. There needs to be money and fame and fortune.
You know what I mean? No, but I just had this misconception of marriage and being a mom and how it was going to be really hard. But that was my calling, and I had to just suffer through it. If I had to do that to be, you know, exalted or whatever. I was completely, you know. So I had a weird idea of what the future was going to be. So I just thought, okay, I'm just going to put my head down. I'm just going to keep going. All the guys I dated, they kind of wanted this housewife figure. I thought, no, that's not me. It's not going to be me. I'm not going to do that. Like, he's going to have to respect me for being something other than that. And so, that's kind of what happened. But I wasn't ever thinking career. I just was kind of going through the motions. When I was in grad school, I thought I'll get my master's and then I'll get my doctorate and then I'll have the right qualifications to teach in a college of, you just go through that, you know, academic route. And then, you know, when I was doing one of these young artist programs, one of these internships, when I got plucked, these two scouts from Munich said, hey, come to Munich. I thought, well, you know, I really prayed about it. And I asked all my professors, they said yes. And I went to the temple and I asked, and I asked my parents what they thought, and it was kind of like, all right, I'm going to do this. It's going to be an adventure. Let's see what happens. I was only 25, and it was the perfect age to go, you know. And I was still young. I could still be discover things. If it was a mistake, then I could move back, you know. And I figured it was good. I'll just go for a year and see how it works. And so, anyway, 8 years later, I'm still there, and I still have a job and a great career right now. So I felt like I wasn't seeking it, but it just kind of happened for me. And that's why I knew it was right, if that makes any sense.
Well, I honestly love that as a story, because I think we as a culture have struggled a lot, especially coming into, like, we're 2016, right? Like, coming into this space as a traditional Mormon culture and Mormon values, and translating that into, like, modern day pretense, because it doesn't mean, what it meant in the 50s, right? The values are still the same, but the application of those values into society or into how we live every day, I think, are due for sort of an upgrade.
Totally.
And to have good, like, successful women like yourself, or people that have gone and followed your dreams and not felt like the need to compromise on your values or on your religion, in order to do that, I think, is a really, really good role model for girls out there. So,
well, it's interesting, and you mentioned before we started the show that you saw one of these pictures that I put on Facebook. So one of the tech guys, after the last show with Mormon Tabernacle Choir on Saturday, was walking back to my dressing room.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I look around, and I'm surrounded by these little girls who were dancers in the program. And I was just walking, and
it looks like flower children or something.
I know, right?
And they're all holding.
They're all orphans now.
Well, they look like they're dressed like peasants, right, in their costumes. And one of the girls said, "My dad said it looks like the Pied Piper, you know, like,
they probably went to the lower grade opera camp." I mean,
no,
you know,
no, you're ruining the story. This is a good moment we're going to.
I'm sorry.
No, but so this girl, so my dress was specially made for this concert because I wanted to be able to wear a modest gown, and that's almost impossible to find. I had a designer from Israel designed this dress, and it was already designed, but I had her make it for me because I wanted to be able to wear something modest, like without compromise, you know. Yeah. And so it ended up arriving in Salt Lake the day I needed it, like the day of the dress rehearsal. It was like the very last minute.
Wow.
And so it all worked out. And so this little girl comes behind me. It's a beautiful silk satin gown. She comes behind me and says, "Can I touch your dress?" And I was like, "Sure you can." And so she grabs it and like because it has this long, kind of a long train.
Yeah.
To, it's very elegant. And she like holds it up. She's like, it's like a princess dress. And she holds it up. And then all of her little friends come around and they're all carrying my dress like I'm this queen. And I'm just like, happened in a second. And this tech guy that was like walking with me pulled out his phone and like snapped a picture. I'm so glad he did, because not that I'm anything special, but it was really cool for them to see a Mormon woman singing in a modest gown with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Like, I had never even thought that was ever possible when I was their age. I it was always a dream of mine to sing with them, but I've never seen anybody who was LDS sing with them before. So I thought, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be the first. And I'm not the first, but at least I'm part of that. And it was really a cool moment to me, because I thought, well, this is what it's all about. It's about introducing this kind of that new possibilities, you know. And not that I'm grateful for Rolando. Like, he's the one that kind of made this all happen, and the generosity of the choir as well. But it's just cool how times are changing, and how Mormon women are able to kind of have more opportunities, it seems like.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And even the bravery, like, honestly, it feels like courage or bravery to at 25 jump over to Europe and make that your life, and just say, I'm being here, I'm following my dreams to this place that isn't built for my situation. But like, if no one takes that risk, if no one makes that jump and like goes and starts there, then there's, you know, the movement never happens. And so I'm just so inspired that like you did that, that you followed your dreams over there. And I just have so much admiration for what you've done. It's awesome.
Thanks. And I never served a mission. I have five brothers. They all served. And I kind of felt like this was it. Like, this is going to be my mission. Like, my career, my job, being overseas, having to explain what I believe all the time.
TV shows in German.
TV shows, radio shows, that they ask all the time about my religion, because it's a curious thing, and it's a peculiar thing as well. I think people misunderstand it, and it's important for them to realize that we're normal, and that we have dreams and aspirations like anybody else, and that we're able to achieve them. And I think that, to me, has just been awesome to see.
That is really incredible. Well, Angela, thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
This is an absolute treat for us. When we saw that you were coming to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and couldn't say anything, we've been waiting with bated breath for this moment.
I appreciate it. No, it's so great to talk to you again. And
we'll put that photo up of you and the girls on our Facebook page.
Oh, please, right. Please do
share it out. So
absolutely.
Are you promoting anything? Like, do you have memoirs or like an album or an Instagram account? Anything you want us to?
We almost made a presidential candidate happen. We've got
nomination
behind us. Would you?
Well, I mean, I was just nominated for a Grammy for for the recent CD I've done, but don't know if that is anything like.
No, a Grammy. You know? I don't know if you've heard of them. They're Grammys.
I mean, weird. I don't have the Grammy. I'm nominated for the Grammy, so I don't know.
Yeah, the nomination just came out this week, didn't they?
Yeah, it did on Tuesday. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Which is the album that people can find you?
It's called Le Nozze di Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro in Italian, and it's Deutsche Grammophon. It's on my Twitter account. If you go on my Twitter account, you'll see.
What's your Twitter? Where can people follow you?
What is my Twitter? I think it's just
Angela do the deal Brower.
What is it? I think it's Angela underscore Brower underscore.
Gosh. Okay, we'll make American. Sure we'll put this up in the show notes, people. Come follow Angela.
I'm so sorry. I don't know.
You are the worst promoter of yourself.
I am. Oh my gosh.
This is your upbringing that's done this to you.
Right?
All right. We're excited to continue to follow you. I mean, wherever you go from here, it's going to be down. I mean, you've hit your peak, so congratulations. So we'll just be excited to watch your career spiral.
It's been fun to watch you single people try to justify your lives and as you as you go alone tonight.
Hey, Jeff, shut up.
I'm just saying.
Shut up.
You guys are so awesome.
I'm not singing in Germany, but I still have a good life, okay?
You right? Public servant.
I'm a public servant. Yeah, it's really exciting. Anyway,
all right, Angela. Thank you, Angela. You so much. And we're due to catch up soon. So let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
And thank you again. Anyway, folks, join us on social media every week. email us, all that stuff. You've heard it all before. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com. Regardless, whatever. For Al, I'm Jeff. And like I like to say, be well, be holy, and be happy. I'm not a girl.